Hello and welcome to The Inner Gamer, episode 158. We are your weekly dose of video game news, reviews, opinions, and discussions made for and by our listeners. My name is Brett Yanofsky.
I'm Devin DeRee.
And I'm Austin Morales.
Today on The Inner Gamer, we play some games. We talk about our stream, Brett playing Shadow of the Colossus.
Woo.
Brett dives into, or not Brett, Austin. Austin, you dive into Aegis Defenders, and then I will give my part two review of Celeste into the gaming industry. A lot of stuff to cover, but just some highlights here. Supercell 2017 made a lot of money. They probably shouldn't have. Some really rough stuff from some really popular YouTubers, Gavin Free and Meg Turney. And then PUBG is increasing in sales, but declining in players. Moving on to our discussion topic for today, it is all about the evolving video game franchises. Some franchises start off one way. As the years progress, they evolve into something completely different. We're going to explore that. And is it a good thing or is it a bad thing? Could be both, could be neither. But we'll look into it. And with that, Brett, please cue the music.
Welcome to the Inner Gamer.
It is February 20th, 2018. Welcome to the Inner Gamer Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, we would love for you to support us on Patreon for as little as $12 a year. Yes, I said a
$12
whole year.
A year, Brett?
Yes, Devin. It is $12 a year.
I'm donating right now.
You can make
don't
this
do
podcast.
That. You're on the podcast.
But I mean, I you can. To. I mean, I'm totally down to have your money contribute to our thing. It'd be fantastic.
He has no shame.
Anyway, if you donate, you can make this podcast better and we'll give you some goodies along the way. So with that said, let's jump into some video games, kids.
Oh yeah. Hey Brett.
Hey.
Remember that
Devin.
Stream we did the other day?
Yeah, that stream we did.
Literally a week ago.
Literally a week ago.
We not did a Tuesday, stream. But the Sunday passed.
We played Shadow of the Colossus, the remake of the amazing game, apparently, that was out on the PlayStation 2 that I never played. Mm-hmm. Austin never played, but Devin played like 20 times.
At least.
Can I interject something?
No, you can't.
So every Sunday, we're going to start streaming a game. So don't forget to come check us out on Twitch.
Twitch.tv/TheInnerGamerCast.
Oh,
bam.
Man.
Yes. I think it's just InnerGamerCast?
No, it's TheInnerGamerCast.
Oh, look at that.
I know. Our Twitter is InnerGamerCast, but Twitch is TheInnerGamerCast. I know I screwed that up like 5 times, so I got it like memorized now. I have to get that right.
That's good. That's good. At least someone knows.
Yes.
So you guys had a lot of fun.
So yeah.
A lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Initial reactions, Brett, to your dive in to the new remake, or at least your, I guess your just
my first
overall
time experiencing
first
any Team Ico game ever. In the history
you didn't
of the
play
universe.
The other one? The,
no, I didn't play Ico. Last Guardian.
Last
Ico,
Guardian.
I didn't play any
yeah,
of them.
The Last Guardian.
No.
Hmm. Interesting.
I know.
Kind of man are you? You're not.
A beautiful,
you're not,
beautiful man.
You're not a man.
So I did not really expect. I was going into this game with the anticipation and the expectation of it being a combat heavy, not combat heavy, but a combat focused game. I didn't understand going into
it. You just watched all the trailers.
Yeah. I didn't realize that this was
all Colossus all the time.
That's all it is.
Yeah. I thought it was just boss battles that were like fighting the boss battles and doing combos and all these things. And then I come to find out, no, this is basically a puzzle game with like some combat elements in there.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you have to outsmart your opponent as opposed to just sheer fighting power of going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big shock to me. And
was
I
it?
Also, yes. Yes. Yeah. Wait, did you say what?
Yeah. I mean, I did.
Okay.
I didn't mean to stump you. I was just.
Wait, did you though?
On stream, you're like,
but
oh, yeah, this
you?
Is a good game.
Yeah.
In your monotone fashion.
No, exactly.
I'm just picking on you.
Oh my gosh. So monotone.
I love Brett.
I like this game.
Oh, so, it
was
so
good.
Oh my God.
This was the best thing I've ever played in my life.
I'm so excited.
No, it was really cool. And I love how this game is so, they don't tell you anything.
No.
Ever. You just go in there, you figure out the story. It's kind of piecemeal to you, but it's not ever explicitly stated in any form or fashion. You just have to figure out what it is. And I still don't know what the end game of this is going to be because we haven't beat it yet.
Which is really exciting.
Yeah.
Because it actually is really
trippy
good.
Trippy as fuck.
There's a lot of mystery
There's
already.
A lot of stuff
and,
going on.
from what I was watching, I'll just interject here. Sorry, Brett, to cut you off.
I'm just going to let you talk about this game.
Okay. So this game was so great for Brett that... Well, I like how getting from one boss to the next, there isn't too much lag time.
No.
Like, yeah. It's pretty much like, okay, we're going to go here. So we go there, a little bit of this, get some to through, you know, I saw you get through a few little like...
And it's funny because I've heard people talking about how they hate having to travel from like boss to boss because they feel like the world is empty.
This ain't no Breath of the Wild.
No, it's not empty. It's gorgeous. And I mean, there's not a lot. I mean, there's nothing there because this is like... the no man's land, essentially.
Right.
And, but I mean, if
which
you just
thanks
look,
for adding the context, well, Evan. Well,
and
I didn't
and
know
that's,
that.
That's what I love about it, is it's not like it's a no man's land, and it's not like it's just this.
I just said that.
That's why I'm
so
saying that it's not.
Let me, oh, you're let correcting
me. Finish,
me.
Let me finish my fucking point, if you would, sir. Please.
Okay, continue.
You know, the game isn't about, it's not set in this no man's land, like, you're obviously in a forbidden land. You're not supposed to be there. The character you're playing isn't supposed to be in this desolate land.
Yeah.
And it's pretty obvious because there's nothing there. It's this strange, eerie, unsettling vastness is kind of how I describe it. I mean, yeah, there's like little lizards and some birds that fly around. But dude, other than that, there's nothing there.
I feel like the character to the world is the lack of actual things, like the lack of character within it. And that's what makes it so interesting is that, you know, there's this vast space of beauty and nature and things happening, but there's just these random colossi that hang around and patrol the land or whatever. And it's like, why are they here? What are they doing? What am I doing?
Yeah.
Who is this God that's talking to me, that's telling me I have to do these things to save my girl?
Was it just me or like instantly I was like, we should not listen to this guy. Yeah. This cannot end well.
Yeah. The ominous voice coming from the heavens. I don't know if I should listen to you.
Plus every time you try to bring back a dead loved one, it never ends well.
Right. Right.
Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood.
Oh, yeah. That goes so well for so many other stories where you bring back the dead. No, it's they all end in fucking happiness.
But is she
happiness.
Dead? Because I didn't know that. And is that something
I
should know?
She is essentially a sacrifice.
Oh, God.
That's what you gather from.
Ugh. Why? She was so beautiful.
Well, that's...
She was a virgin.
Again,
wasn't she?
No, it's not that. It's like you can tell, like, it's part of the secrecy. And one thing you guys got to understand, Ico and Shadow of the Colossus and Last Guardian, they're all set in the same universe.
I was about to say that. That's pretty cool.
Damn it.
I didn't think about that till just now. No, I was just thinking,
sense.
Like... That's probably what you're going to say because
there,
it would make sense.
Well, there's all this lore behind it. I won't go into it because we will be here for a fucking hour. But there's basically this evil deity, Dorman, and everything kind of circles around it. It's all about light versus dark, the inner darkness that is in all of us and this light that you have to combat it. And Shadow of the Colossus is a very subtle storytelling of that. And... how, like, what lengths will you go to save someone that you love and care about, despite the fact that she was sacrificed for some reason other than, I don't know, who knows?
Did you know that Battlefront 2 is set in the same universe as Empire Strikes Back? How do you feel about that?
I hate you.
Anyway, back to the game.
But yeah, it is in the same universe. It's all the same galaxy.
It is.
It's almost as if it's
shitty
a fucking franchise
and all that stuff. But this game is really awesome, and the team that did this, Blue Point, did an incredible job at rebuilding this game.
Yeah,
they literally
started
from scratch.
Did you go and look at like all the old like look at the old like versions side by side?
Yeah,
like it's
and it's amazing to me that there's even it's just so fascinating to see all of the content that's coming out about this game because there are people that are like. That are saying that this is not, they wish this wasn't remade because it doesn't have the essence of the original.
No,
or what
whatever.
Is the essence of
and
the
I'm
original?
Like, okay, but I just think this makes a game. It has the same exact mechanics, the same camera issues and whatnot, but it's gorgeous. It's such a good looking game. And then for people that didn't know this game existed, by just saying Shadow of the Colossus,
yeah,
they are exposed. And then there's also people that are complaining, saying that, oh, this is the first time this game has ever come out. And people today that are picking up this game for the first time, thinking it's never been out before, are going to complain about the issues and stuff in this, in the, yeah, the system and whatnot. I'm like, I don't know if they will. I mean, I don't think the system's that bad. Like, they say the climbing mechanics suck. And I'm like, I think the climbing mechanics are actually pretty damn accurate.
Yeah.
You just have to pay attention and grab onto shit at the right time.
It's literally like stamina management. And
if it's not a magnet, there's an issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Magnetizes the hair.
I don't know. I think it's
the criticisms to me, the criticisms are so few and far between for some people. And, you know, people are going to hate what they want to hate. That's whatever. That's their opinion. They may not like it. They may not like the camera. They may not like the controls. But you cannot deny the immense success that this game has had and the immense cult following that it has had, that this isn't just something that people have ho-hummed picked up. This is, they've remade it for a reason.
Right.
So
I think
obviously
it's, awesome.
It's $40. It's a dig in my opinion.
I think it's a dig. Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's an experience that pleasantly satisfied, because this is the kind of game, you know, I talk about all the games that I like, the walking simulators like Firewatch, What Remains of Edith Finch, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
This reminds me of those experiences, mm-hmm, except it has more challenge to it. Yeah. Like, those other games are
How are you liking the Colossi so far? Do you feel like there's a cool diversity amongst all of them? Like, the grand scale of them all that seemed pretty cool to you?
Yeah. And I like that there's still a, like, you know, when you're going into a Colossi, the ultimate goal is you need to find the glowing beam area, then you need to start stabbing and kill. Like, that's the essence of each one.
It's easy for Brett.
But it makes sense. Yeah.
Point to blue glyph thing. Yeah. Stab blue glyph thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Booga booga.
But I like how every single one is so different. Like, the last one that we fought, lizard scorpion thingy or whatever in the big, huge arena pit.
It was the armored one that you had to, like, flip over.
Yeah. And
scorpion lizard.
Yeah.
Scorpion lizard.
That was just another layer of challenge for the exact same game mechanic, but they're just layering on different ways to approach that. Yep. And I think that's really nice.
It's that really nice mix, but it's that melding of that environment and gameplay all kind of coming together to create the experience. And it's really well melded.
Yeah.
We could kind of mirror the game industry with the movie industry. And unlike the movie industry, where remakes usually suck complete balls, at least in the gaming industry, we can make, like, these remakes actually hold some weight and people can enjoy them again.
Again, like Brett said, better, you can have people who've never played them before now get to come to them and have an experience.
As in the movie industry, you just complete garbage all the time, and some reason we give them money.
Hey, man. It's pretty good, though.
Yeah.
Huh.
It?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I know. That was probably not the best. You know, it's pretty good. What are you talking about? It.
Last thing I want to say on this game before we move on to the next topic is I want to say there's people out there that I've been listening to and reading about and stuff that complain about the thing that the camera does, in which there are moments where you're riding your horse aggro through the land, and then the camera favors the character to one side of the screen as opposed to dead center.
Yeah. Mm.
And people are complaining about that being a negative feature of the game. But although it is a little disorienting at first when it starts shifting the camera around, I think it's a brilliant design decision to do that.
Yeah.
Because by putting that character to the side, one, it's more cinematic, the rule of thirds, and two, you're getting to experience and see that world as you're traveling through it more.
This whole game is about grand scaling Colossi across a giant backdrop of sky and weird environmental world shit. So that's what it's about. We don't need to be looking at Agro's ass galloping across the screen.
Yeah, I think when you fought the flying one, oh man.
Wasn't that intense?
That was cool.
Even when you fought the serpent one in the water, like, even that was cool to go on the knee, like,
glowing lights.
I don't know how people, what's not to love?
Yeah.
What's not to love?
Dig.
Yep.
All right, Austin, you have a game. So I'm pretty certain that they said this was called Aegis when we talked to them on the podcast. but this is a game from a group out of Los Angeles, Guts Department,
Good.
Aegis Defenders. We had them on our podcast a while back and interviewed them about this game that is now out.
Episode 131.
Episode 131. And Austin, you've now played a lot of it.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Good amount.
From what I noticed, there's two parts.
Okay.
So I just got to the fourth area in the first part. I guess I'll call it Act 1. I'm not sure how the story...
Fourth area in the first part.
Yeah. So they have a map, and
okay.
It goes... they have a top part, and it looks like they have a bottom part, and it's all part of this world. And so, yeah, I'm on the fourth part. Anyway, it's a side-scrolling platformer with, at the end of each level, you have a tower defense mode. And by God, that is actually a lot of fun and can be super hard.
Yeah.
Me and Brett just played it. I think the tower defense added element to this game really makes it unique.
Totally made for co-op, though.
Yes. Oh,
holy
and that makes it even better. Because I was playing this one mission and I could not beat it. But having Brett there significantly increased my odds of winning.
Significantly easier. Still difficult, though?
I mean, it was significantly easy just because I was there. I mean, it's my gameplay style.
Oh, shut the fuck up. God, I had to sit here and tell you how to hold up a sword in a Shadow of the Colossus. Don't even with me.
Let me talk about the story real quick. There is a story there. It's not like this really crazy story, but I think... the time it took to actually develop it and come up with the lore is actually really interesting. So it's about this grandpa and his granddaughter, and their family had died because they...
Oh, God.
There was this revolution where this guy went against the gods. They called them deathless, these people who, I guess, assume they can't die.
Yeah.
And they have all these superpowers, and you know, some are malevolent and some are, you know, super evil. Or is it benevolent?
Benevolent,
yeah. So, revolution happened. This guy was like, we shouldn't follow these people. So he started killing all these communities that worship these godlike creatures, and that's where we are now. And so I guess the world is kind of in shambles, and you have this tribe that runs around the world and, you know, has this crazy ideology. So basically, you just go in, you're relic hunters, and you hunt relics. You go into these, I guess, tombs or places where they're old ancient things you can find in the ground, and that's how we start. And the Aegis is one of those relics. And so you get thrust into like this grander story of like this ancient past and this weapon that could you know, turn the tide of battle between, you know, good and evil, and that's where we are. And it's really fun. I enjoy it. The levels are pretty simple to move through. I mean, it's just side scrolling, a few puzzles here and there, but then the real meat of the gameplay is at the end. Is where you fight this tower defense stuff. And so usually they have two sides. So you have two characters that have to switch sides very often. The old grandpa has a hammer, which he's able to build walls or like little stumps, and then you can turn those into turrets, and then he can actually, with his hammer, build stuff faster. And then you have the granddaughter, which is like a range... Oh, excuse me. It's like a range character. So she can use a bow, or she can use a rifle, a laser rifle, and she drops down traps. So her main one is the bomb or the mine. And then if you can upgrade that to do a spike trap. So as these creatures walk past these spikes, they take damage. And so you have three different enemy types. You have yellow enemies, blue enemies, and red enemies. And so I think it's kind of cool that if you're... You want to pair the color with your character. So the blue enemies take more damage from the granddaughter, who's blue. And then the yellow enemies take more damage from the grandpa, which is yellow.
It's kind of like a rock, paper, scissors almost, it sounds like.
Yeah.
One of those, I can't think of what it's usually called in the gaming world. But yeah, it's like rock, paper, scissors. One kind of is better at hitting one than the other.
Right, yeah. So you just do more damage if you match the colors together. Right. So I think that's really cool. I mean, it's very simple mechanics, but it makes for a good time. I've been having a lot of fun with it. And man...
Yeah, that adds some challenge to the game.
Yeah, because I was I was having a shit hard time with this one level. But the story's pretty good. The music is amazing. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is with these indie games, but they have like... It sounds like AAA quality music.
I don't know who they're getting to do their music, but man.
It's amazing.
Aces.
Yeah. It just, I mean, it puts the soul into the game, which, I mean, it already has a lot of good things going for it, but it just, you know, puts the cherry on top.
I think they got, if I remember correctly.
Someone important?
No, it was somebody,
someone important.
Riley Koenig did the music for this game.
Very nice.
And he has worked on other things. He's an independent music person out of Vancouver.
Very cool. Very cool. And then the art style is just amazing. It's very anime-esque. And I love that already. Like the art is just great, and the way the colors, the tone and the colors, they're the colors that really set the tone of each level, and yeah. I really enjoy that because I don't play a lot of these games because this is more of like a 32-bit, right? Like 16-bit, 32-bit. It's like 32-bit, right?
Yeah, I think that's still considered 16-bit. I don't know the bits anymore.
Yeah, I get confused. Devin, what'd you think? Is that like a 32-bit style game? It's not 16,
no,
is it?
No, I think it's 16.
16? Okay. Yeah. So the last time I played anything like this was like Pokemon, you know, back on the Game Boy and stuff. Like, I really wasn't a huge 16-bit guy, but the way that they use the colors and the tones and the lighting, it's just really...
The lighting is really nice.
It does a lot for this game, which otherwise it could be super flat, you know? And I think you see that with a lot of games now, a lot of the 16-bit games. Like, they really... The way that they use color and lighting just adds so much dimension to what isn't there, which I think says a lot more than, you know, putting, like, you know, realistic lighting in everything, you know? So I'm really impressed with it. It's a dig. You should get it. It was only $20. I don't know how long the game is, but so far I put like 2 or 3 hours into it.
I just read 18 levels.
Perfect. I've only got to 4, so I have a lot more to go.
Hell yeah.
So it's 2, so 4. What was that, like? At least 6
Math.
Hours. Yeah,
Math.
At least 9 hours.
Lots of things to talk about.
I'm a gamer, not a mathematician.
That's funny. It's a cool game. So if you want to hear our interview with them, go to theinnergamer.net/131. That will be the interview that we had with the team behind the game. Granted, this was back in July of last year, so a lot has happened to the game since then. But it's very cool. Check it out. I think you'll thoroughly enjoy it. Wait, did you say dig?
Oh, yeah, totally. Okay, totally dig. Yes, totally.
No, ditch it.
You'll thoroughly enjoy it. No, I meant a delay.
No, I meant... which is kind of funny, because I was really into Monster Hunter there for a little bit, and now I jumped into this, and I'm like, I really want to play this.
Yeah, I need to jump back into Monster Hunter. I just haven't.
I know.
I just haven't played games. It's terrible. Anyway, next game we have... Devin, you wanted to revisit Celeste now that you played more.
We talked pretty briefly about Celeste last week, just you and I, and we really covered the core mechanics of the game and a little bit about the story, being this main character, Madeline, climbing this major mountain called Celeste Mountain. And yes, the game is great. It's incredible. There's a lot of really cool elements as far as the platforming and the mechanics of your dash and how you can, you know, recover that that dash, because you can only really do it once. There's a lot to it, but really what I wanted to touch on was the actual story itself, because we really didn't get too far into it. We only played a couple hours. I wanted to revisit that today because this game covers some really deep shit.
Yeah. That's why I really wanted to get into it, was for that reason, because people are calling it their possible game of the year because, one, the gameplay mechanics are so good.
Wow.
But then the story has something like... It was a surprise, a shock to everybody, I think.
Before we jump into it, how far have you gotten? Do you know?
I'm on the last level.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And, well, I've put a lot of hours into it because each level has a certain number of little fun things to do, like the strawberries. You got to get the strawberries. They're like just little challenges. I know it sounds so weird when I say it. Like, get the little strawberries. No, but there's the strawberries, and then there is, you can get the blue heart in each level, which is like a real big challenge. And then you can get the cassette tape, which is an unlock for what they call the B-side, which is basically the challenge run for that specific level.
Oh, it's so fucking hard.
It's fucking ridiculously hard.
Challenge run? So you have to get done with the level in a certain amount of time, or like, how does it work out?
So if you want to know, I've completed all the B-roll maps so far. Brett, how many deaths did you say you have?
Like 220.
My combined total deaths with all blue hearts, all red hearts, and all B-side roll levels completed, I am at 4,842 deaths.
Let me see. Holy shit.
I have sunk 19 hours into this game.
Wow.
Okay, are you connected?
So if you want to know, that's how many deaths is it again that I had? 4,842 divided by 19 hours. I have died roughly 254 times per hour of gameplay.
Oh,
it's
man.
Hard. But again, going back
DPH,
to
DPH, guys, death per hour.
That's the new like measure unit of measurement in some of these games. The game covers Madeline's reflection of her depression, and that's actually the enemy in the game. It's like her, it's called like the demon or whatever, or her part of herself, and it looks like her, but it's her depression. And I really have to applaud this game for really giving an accurate voice to what it's like to have depression, speaking as someone who has suffered from it from before, and how one of the characters, he, in a very great, friendly way, asks her what it's like. What is it like to have depression? And she says it sucks. He goes, I know that, but what is it like? And her response was absolutely like, it got me right in the feels, because she says, it's like being at the bottom of the ocean and darkness is surrounding you in all directions. You feel completely claustrophobic and exposed. And I was like, holy crap. Man, like, and it's a very emotional moment. I'm like, I'm supposed to be just playing a platforming game. Can I go back to dying?
Yeah.
I didn't expect to be on my lunch break, like, teary-eyed at work, trying to, like, hide it while I'm sitting on a casual couch. I'm not playing a game and crying.
I find it really fascinating how there's been a lot of games like that have touched on that subject and have done it so well. Like, Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice, with their way that they dealt with, you know, that stuff. And then Night in the Woods was also dealing with depression.
Hell, even Borderlands 2, Assault on Dragon Keep deals with, you know, what it's like to lose a loved one.
Yeah.
The death of someone that you care about.
Yeah. We should revisit that topic at some point, a discussion topic. Emotions in video games.
Oh, man.
Deep emotions.
Okay.
Well, just for this game to be recognized and nominated for Game of the Year at this point in time, so early in the year.
Yeah.
That's saying a lot.
Well, it came out the same week as Monster Hunter World, and it's like, what is this year already?
What am I like?
and it's a Switch game. Is it on any other platform? Yeah,
it's on everything.
It's on everything,
wow.
Man.
Yeah, and it's the best selling on the Switch. Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah,
this is fucking awesome. Like, it already looks fun.
Yeah,
and I think the appeal of it is that once you die, you're right back in it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, it's just continuous gameplay.
There's no...
Oh, you've died. Okay, restart from last checkpoint. Yeah. Okay, loading. Oh, okay, now we can do this again. Because that's what he just does.
I mean, like every other game out there.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, Dark Souls, even all the praise I give it, it's like, fuck, you've got to go from the bonfire back to the boss. So I've got to track through all this bullshit again.
Get all your souls back.
Get everything back. No,
die in the process.
He just does not do that. It's just like, oh, you died again. Get back in there.
Yeah.
So I really applaud this game for everything that it's...
You said Aegis.
Did I?
Yeah, Celeste.
We've been playing too many games.
Too many things happening.
No, that's really good. I want to play it now.
Yeah.
And this is a game that I definitely knew I would not play ever.
Yeah, same
here. If we weren't here talking about it,
yeah,
I would dismiss it. Like, if you told me in passing, like, oh, it's a great game, you should play it, I'd be like, okay, yeah, I might check it out.
Okay.
Yeah. But now, like, I'm like, damn it. And it's only $20, right?
Right.
God.
Yeah.
Duh.
So good.
I have $20.
That's good. Well, that's going to be it for the games we played. So Austin's going to spend his $20 on this game, and we're going to take a break to come back with our video game news. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
It is time for our video game news. In this segment, we share the best headlines in the week in the gaming industry, and we have quite a collection of news this week. I feel like, as we do every week, but this one is no exception. The first thing on the list is Overwatch League, everybody. We have some changes with the Overwatch League, and they have signed the first female player to a team in Overwatch League. It is Kim Si-yeon, and I probably pronounced that
that's
wrong.
That's probably wrong.
So you probably pronounced that wrong. So wrong.
I mean, that's pretty close, probably. But either way, she was signed to the Shanghai Dragons, and that's in addition to three other Korean players that were signed. And Shanghai has a 0-10 record, so this will probably help out their talent quite a bit. But it's awesome to see that we have you know, so like some female exposure popping into the Overwatch League, and hopefully we start seeing more of that as time goes on. And yeah, so that's Overwatch League right there.
I'm sorry, I thought Dallas Fuel had a female player.
No.
That's weird.
According to this article, it's first. It's the
I mean,
first
good
one.
For them, yeah. Yeah, good for them.
And then yeah, so that's about all I got for that one. On another note, we have Supercell. Do you guys know Supercell? Familiar with Supercell? Clash of Clans.
Okay, yes.
Clash Royale.
Oh my god.
Remember those games?
Yes.
Okay. So last year, 2017, Supercell, I want to mention to you guys, they have four games. They have that. They have Clash of Clans, Clash of Clans, Clash Royale. They have a game called Brawl Stars, and then they have one other game called Heyday. Last year, they never brought out a game. They brought in $810 million in profit and $2 billion in revenue without releasing a single game.
Good for them, but this is what's wrong with the gaming industry. Oh. EA looks at stuff like this and is like, we want a chunk of this pie.
They didn't have to do shit. Yeah. You see that?
Yeah, they
maintain a couple, like what? Maybe a little bit of cleanup here and there?
Yeah, at least a few patches, few updates.
Yeah, little bit of updates here and there.
Fucking millions of dollars.
But the thing with them is the Supercell,
billion.
Fortunately, they do make pretty good games. They just tack on like microtransactions on top of it, but their games are pretty solid, which I give them some credit for, with the fact that at least they're not putting out shit all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But they've literally only made four games, which is insane. And they said that actually wasn't a good year for them. Well, obviously, because they didn't bring out a game. But it wasn't to the expectations that they had. They had a better year in 2016. But that's awesome. The fact that they did that. Two of their games have been out for 5 years. So they've been out on the market for a very, very long time. And they're still making a lot of money. Clash Royale had its biggest esports tournament ever, with 27.4 million players participating. And then they have Brawl Stars, which is the first game of its kind on mobile in beta. And Brawl Stars looks pretty cool. It's like a
Smash-like thing?
Sort of. It's like a 3v3 battle deal. They have, it's online, and you pitch yourself against other players, 3v3, team up with friends, choose a brawler. I guess it is kind of Smash Bros, but it's like a top-down view, and there's like two sides, and you attack in the middle, essentially. And yeah, fight to the top. So,
very nice.
And it's getting good reviews, so people are digging it. Anyway, that's Supercell making lots of money.
Dude, well, that's mind-blowing.
It is.
See, this is why gaming is good. Money.
Yeah. Game is good. Money.
Games make money good.
The games make money good. So God of War is coming out soon.
Oh.
What did we say? Yes. What did we say it was? Hang on. Yes. 420. That's right.
420. I have that day off, and I'm going to play that game all day. I want anyone to talk to
you're
me.
You're not playing Nintendo Labo?
Hell no, I'm not playing. Come on, man. I want a real man's story.
God of War.
So God of War is coming out, and Sony is obviously pushing hard on their marketing for this game. They want it to be good. They want it to be huge. And there was a NBA basketball game that happened with the Oakland Grizzlies. And during one of the breaks, end of the quarters or whatever, they turned down the lights, and then all of a sudden they played a trailer that filled up the entire court of the stadium and was like, here you can see Kratos and his little kid fighting guys on this massive court. And I was like, damn, son, that is amazing. So that's one of the big, huge marketing things that they did. And it was a super cool like just spectacle to see this trailer like ginormous on the basketball court.
It looked pretty legit. Like that's some good marketing. Whoever thought up that is a genius.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Genius. And in addition to that, they brought out a text adventure, which I did not realize was happening until I was listening to the Game Informer podcast, and they did a recording of this text adventure. So somebody was the game master that was reading it off, and then people were submitting their comments.
Yeah. Oh, that's so awesome. Yeah. God, it's so fucking cool. Yes! So
have you guys played the text adventure yet?
No.
So you get it through Facebook Messenger. So you have to open a Facebook Messenger.
You're talking to the kid,
search
right?
for it. No, you're playing as a kid.
Oh, you're... Oh.
Yeah,
oh.
So it's like following Atreus. Is that his name? Yeah, Atreus. And then you are...
Atreus.
Basically, it's reading stuff to you, and then you have to say what you want to do. So you start in a cabin, and you say, go grab the arrows, and it'll go grab the arrows. And you say, go north, or go south, or go west, and that's how you pass direction. And then depending on where you go, your story plays out, and you can collect arts, up to 8 art pieces from the game by playing through this text adventure through Facebook Messenger, just text chat. It's not great, but it is an interesting concept, like to be sitting there and texting. And then if you don't play it for a while, Facebook will like message you and be like, hey, you should come back and help Atreus fight off Call of the Wild and beat bad guys and all this stuff.
It's an interesting road to take for a promo to this game.
Yeah.
Which, even though it sucks, I think it's pretty different.
It's different. It's a different way to promote.
Yeah. Right. And it's reaching new people. I mean, these are two examples of like, let's use Facebook where people play Supercell games all the time. And then let's also go to a basketball game and stick this on the court. Like, this is two places where you would never expect to see video game ads for this type of game happening. Excuse me.
Man, video games are in the culture now. Like, yeah. That is just a thing.
It's just straight up embedded in like literally everything at a friggin' Grizzlies game.
Oh man, this is awesome.
That's cool.
So we're about to turn the mood down a little bit, unfortunately. But
I'm glad this is in the middle of all this.
Yeah,
turn it down, bring it back up.
Yeah, it's going to be a sandwich.
So there is a story that came out. This is just kind of a look at. I just think
our
it's
culture,
something worth talking
again,
about. Yeah, the culture.
Well, kind of our culture.
Yeah. So YouTubers Gavin Free and Meg Turney. Gavin Free was one of the guys behind Rooster Teeth. He is the was the former creative director, I believe. And then Meg Turney is a big cosplayer. She does a lot of media stuff and gamer.
She used to
everything.
Work for Rooster Teeth.
We used to work for Rooster Teeth. They were at their home and survived a break-in by an armed deranged fan who drove 9 hours or drove 11 hours to potentially kill somebody.
So apparently he had resentment towards Gavin Free and
was growing a liking towards Meg, essentially.
So he went there to, it seems like, to kill Gavin and take Megan Turney, which would have been awful. And so apparently he broke in and they hid and he fired a shot in the house and couldn't find them. So he ended up leaving and the cops showed up and he ended up supposedly taking his life.
Right.
So that's the worst side of this, of gaming and the culture and just like nerdism, I guess. Like, I mean, there are people out there who have issues and this stuff happens on the occasion. It seems like it's pretty rare now. Like, I'm sure people still have that visual in their head that, oh, hey, a gamer is just this guy who sits in his grandma's basement and plays video games for 10 hours straight and has a really shitty job or, you know, eats Cheetos all day, like we see on South Park.
Yeah.
The guy who plays WoW just all the time. Became a god. Yeah. Thoughts, guys?
You know, it is a risk that, you know, a lot of people on YouTube or streamers just in general that they have to worry about. There's a popular one a couple years back, Philip DeFranco. He had somebody walk in on his set during one of his Facebook streams. It's a huge risk, and when you put your life out there, some crazies are bound to come by, and it sucks because people need to realize that while they're inviting you into their home so that you can see like their life or their hobbies and their impact in an industry like, you know, Philip DeFranco does news and Gavin Free and all them, obviously it's like video games and cosplay. While they're inviting you into their home to experience that, it can turn ugly. And it's very unfortunate because there are just some people who are very deeply disturbed out there, and it's not going to end out well.
Yeah.
We covered another article last year sometime where some Korean guy followed an American streamer, and he ended up flying over to America with everything he owned. And I don't know if he was kicked out of his house or he didn't like his parents or something, but he was like, I connect with you so strongly. I don't have anything. And I decided to show up here because you're like my only friend.
Yeah.
But the guy was like, I don't know who you are. I'll give you some money so you can get yourself a hotel room, but I'm not letting you in here. Like, I just stream, and if you feel this way about me, that's not my problem. You know, I want to make entertainment for you, but I don't want you to come here to my house.
I don't want you in
with my
home.
Family.
There's a line to draw.
Yeah, it's like some professionalism there that people, I don't think, completely understand. I mean,
right?
There's some weight here.
Lonely is a big part of life and stuff like that. I feel like this is a good example of things where, you know, if you know, there's whoever is around you, like, don't shut people out of your life just because they're different from you or just because they don't, you know, there's something, you know, you don't have to hang out with them every day or whatever, but don't cut them off, because if you're going to do that, other people may also do that. And that's just a slippery slope that leads to situations where people are going to do things like this because been blocked off for so long from the society and everything like that. So I think it's just important just to, you know, be present for people and stuff like that and not push them away and all that stuff. So I think that's kind of my lesson to take away from this is, you know, and then also respect, I mean, the fact that these guys are putting their lives out there, guys and girls.
Right.
It's respect their privacy because they are doing this because this is their job and everything, but they're also this is their personal life that you are interacting with at this point, and like, you know, give them their space and respect that they also have a life outside of this.
Right.
And that's just something that is a lesson that is hard to put out there, but you just kind of have to, you know, understand that and realize there's
no manual of like social. I want to say social media, but like this, everyone puts their life out there so much. You know, there is that blurred line where it's just like people don't know where it ends.
Yeah, social media is a blessing and a curse. And hopefully we find a way to make it more of a blessing and less of a curse.
Yes.
Over time.
But one would hope.
But anyway, let's talk about some happy stuff.
Oh, thank you.
So this is a rumor, but I think it's an interesting rumor. And I feel like it's all but confirmed at this point. But last year, the group Vicarious Visions brought out Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy. And this year, it is rumored that they will be releasing Spyro the Dragon's trilogy as a remastering.
I grew up on that shit.
Hell yeah. I love Spyro the Dragon. And the
played
rumor
way
has
too much
it.
Of it.
Oh yeah. It's good stuff. Just wait. Just it won't be wait. On the Switch, but
that's unfortunate. Ah, damn it. Come on.
They say that this will potentially be announced March 2018, so next month. And slated for the third quarter of the same year. So that would work out pretty well because September of 2018, if they launched it then, would line up with the Spyro the Dragon's 20th anniversary. So, hell yeah.
Interesting. 20th anniversary.
Is that crazy?
I think
that would be...
Don't you feel old now?
Fuck off, Brett.
I think that would be a good move.
I think so, too.
Very good move.
Yeah. And that'll be just a good time in general. September is kind of the calm before the storm, as we've talked about many times in the past.
God.
And October, the next month, we have Red Dead Redemption. I don't know.
October, November this year, it's just going to be brutal, man.
Yeah. Red Dead Redemption, Call of Duty, Battlefield, whatever else is going to come out. It's bad. It's bad.
Please donate to our cause because we need money to buy some of
these games.
If you donate
to the Inner Gamers Patreon, we'll use it for things like video games.
Oh, gosh. No, we're actually going to use it to bring more and better content to you guys, which may or may not also
which is video games. Video games.
Yes. Yes.
In the form of video games.
Which is better than what...
I have no shame.
Yeah, no shame.
None.
No shame. It's true. He has no shame.
It's That's real.
I mean, he just comes into the podcast room naked, just like, what's up, guys? I just want to be comfortable.
What's up, everybody?
Yeah, that's getting annoying. I'm just kidding.
He always comes in with his pants off. He's cursing at me. It's like being a Thanksgiving dinner.
Wait, what?
What? Your Thanksgiving isn't like that?
No.
Interesting.
Never. Never, ever.
Huh.
So we're going to move into cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, let's talk about some cryptocurrency.
Huh.
You guys know Atari?
Totally.
Game people.
I've heard of them.
Yeah. So their Atari box apparently might be shuttered. We're not quite sure yet, but they have said that their Indiegogo campaign was halted and their website currently is down for AtariBox.com. Let me make sure that's still valid. And...
Ow.
Oh, no, it's back. Really? It's back up, so okay. We're good.
Okay, good.
There's
good.
Just a wait
Never
list.
Mind, JK. So just,
yeah. Oh, they got some cool stuff on here now promoting it. I don't know what it's going to be, but anyway. So back to the main part of the story, cryptocurrency. Atari is making a cryptocurrency. Everybody and their dog right now is working on cryptocurrency.
I guess so,
there's like
man.
5 billion cryptos out there that you can or coins you can like pay for and buy and you know do what you want with.
Do you have stock in Bitcoin?
I do.
Do you really?
I just bought some a couple weeks ago. When I dropped it, $7,400 a coin.
Man.
Yep.
How many did you buy?
I mean, I didn't buy a single one. I just bought a piece of one because I can't afford a single one. I didn't want to like spend a lot of money on it.
Buy a piece of this. Yeah, I don't feel you.
But you can buy a quarter of one or you can buy half of one or whatever and it'll make money. And I made $200 in 2 days, so that was nice.
You serious?
Hell yeah, man.
Fucking hell.
But then I'll probably go down next week and I'll lose all of it, so who knows? It's so volatile,
you know,
it's crazy.
Swings and roundabouts.
Swinging.
But blockchain is a big part. I mean, this is basically going to be the foundation of the future of technology because the tech is so incredible in what it can do, and nobody really understands what it does exactly. But I'm starting to learn a little bit of it, but I haven't quite... grasped it yet. But anyway, Atari is wanting to make a cryptocurrency with a partnership to basically build a block or a partnership with a company that's building a blockchain based digital entertainment platform.
Words. What is this shit?
Because
what is this shit?
Because
man?
Why the fuck not?
So they want to launch the Atari token, which will be used on digital gaming platforms, and the Pong token for online casinos.
Jesus Christ.
What the fuck?
Yes.
What
so
the fuck, Atari?
I don't
fuck
quite...
video games.
Understand the reason for this?
No one does.
I mean, I guess in a way it's kind of
no.
I mean, if you think about it, digital currency in games is basically cryptocurrency. It's just not using blockchain technology. I mean, like you buy points for Clash of Clans to pay in game or whatever. Like
so, just like across bucks. The board, like just the dollar type thing. But now it's going to be Atari coins.
Yeah. But it actually has real world value. Whereas you know, this is your in game currency only has value in that game. This is something could have value across platforms and across systems and whatnot. And could grow that value as well because it is its own thriving economy essentially.
the microtransaction to end all microtransactions is basically what it is. Hey, buy Atari bucks and use those in Star Wars Battlefront 2.
What if your Atari bucks literally became the currency for everything digital?
Like, that's so crazy.
Like, every microtransaction supported game, they don't have to build the money anymore. They just use Atari bucks. So it's like, if you make $1 million in your Clash of Clans.
I know, ridiculous.
Where are we lit?
I mean, it just sounds a little weird. Atari bucks just sounds really stupid. I'm sorry. That sounds really
dumb. I apologize. Atari token.
No, even worse. Now you sound like you're trying to sell me itchy and scratchy dollars.
Oh, my God. I just said bucks because it just made sense.
Right.
Atari bucks.
Oh, man.
Okay, we just were like, oh, the Switch is so amazing. This is a great year for the Switch. The time we're living in is awesome. And then this shit comes out. It's just like,
well, what? When they announced that their share price actually soared during that time.
So really?
Yeah, it went up a bit.
It's cryptocurrencies right now.
But I mean,
think we literally have created a bubble at this point in time.
There's like, a little bit of bubble happening.
This is a huge bubble right now.
Yeah, because people don't know what it's going to become. I mean, exactly. It's definitely going to be embedded in everything at some point, but because this is like the next level of encryption, essentially.
Right, right.
And it's just not, we're not really sure. It's the Wild West right now, so
right,
nobody really knows what direction it's going to go. But seeing this happen, it's just, it's weird.
It's funny.
It's strange. So I'll be curious to see what they end up doing.
It's a dream.
But I like that idea of creating a, you know, cross game digital currency thing that could be used everywhere, but why not just use dollars? I guess dollars is only United States based, so this would be a global currency that can be used everywhere, potentially, if they make it that way.
If I get a platinum on a PlayStation game, does that translate to Atari bucks?
Yeah, does that help?
No.
Should. How do we make
it? It only affects the future. It doesn't affect the past.
But
and then
in the future,
you have to have at least $1,500 worth
of
content.
But we are the way for the future.
$1,500 worth of content. Okay.
Last story we have. PUBG guys. PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
Yeah, y'all know. Y'all wouldn't shut the fuck up about it for
so
long.
So its sales has now reached 30 million copies sold.
Oh, my goodness.
Not dollars, just copies. And as the numbers continue to grow, the player numbers are dropping, specifically on PC. So they registered their first decline in concurrent player numbers, and that drop was around 2% compared to 30 days earlier, and it has now gone up to 5% according to Steam charts.
That sucks.
For a better idea of how this affects the game's peak numbers, you can look at this chart on this link that I am not showing you because I'm looking at an article.
It's at vg247.com.
But they said that mid-January was PUBG's most recent player record at 3.257 million players, so that still puts it up there with everything else, and it's really high.
Oh, the dropping numbers.
But there is a slight drop happening, so it's like, what the hell? What's going to happen? That's why they're bringing out a mobile game.
Right.
So.
Which is still crazy.
No, oh, yeah.
I think Fortnite just is more appealing to more people, and I think they're just taking away some of that. So, I mean, I can't see kids getting into PUBG and like staying there. You know what I mean? I see them going to Fortnite, which is basically the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's a lot more user friendly, I feel like.
Well, I feel like that's also Fortnite's captured the more less serious tone that I think PUBG was trying to do.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's the Overwatch effect.
Yep.
Which is actually the we went into this. What was it? It wasn't Overwatch. It was before that. What was before Overwatch?
Today?
No, like the Overwatch effect.
Oh.
It's really the Team Fortress effect.
Yeah.
Bam. Yeah,
basically. So I know the people listening can't see this, but this is a graph of the players every day graph over time.
Wow.
So early on, like it's just a small slope. And then around August of 2017, and then August, whenever it starts like jumping like crazy, and then now it's up to like right now there's 963,000 players playing the game at this current moment. 935,000, sorry.
I don't understand.
Jeez.
I know.
I guess that's across the world, right?
Yeah, it's global. Okay. Yeah, it's global.
That's
pretty wild.
Man, those servers. Jeez. No wonder they have so many problems.
I know. Yeah.
Like those fucking
servers. I can't imagine having to manage that shit. That would be way too much. Everything just breaking on you.
Team with the
Dave, are you all right in here? I could use some help. I could really use some help.
I just imagine being in the Millennium Falcon with shit just
Fine. Everything's fine. Everything's fine.
I have one last thing I want to mention that I just thought was flipping hilarious. On Kotaku, they had an article about some PUBG players playing the game, and this guy and his friend were playing duos in PUBG Battlegrounds, and they were winning. There was only two enemies left, and they wasted no time dispatching the first, but their last-ditch effort to grab a better position didn't end so well, and then there was one person left. So they're in this game, duos, right? There's one person left, and they were like, where the heck is this guy? They have no idea. And then suddenly a voice came out of nowhere, because in this game they have
proximity
chat, right? So the voice says, hey, guys! And him and his partner turn around to see a nearly naked man on the ground behind them wearing nothing but underwear. And he's partially obscured by a patch of tall grass. And he's like, you can go ahead and kill me. I don't care, he says in proximity chat. And he made it all the way to end with nothing but himself and his naked self.
Okay.
No armor, no guns, nothing. They didn't have anything left to prove. So they looked at each other and they were like, huh, I don't know what to do. And then he stood up, the guy that was naked on the ground, and said, actually, you know what? I'm just going to die from the wall. Then he runs into the blue and dies. And this guy and his partner win chicken dinner by a naked man who killed himself in the wall.
Wow. Okay.
I don't.
Wow.
This I can't.
This is PUBG, guys.
What a strange interaction. That is the most bizarre. Like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. This shit happens in PUBG.
Oh.
I'm going to put this article in the show notes because it's flipping hilarious. And there's a video too. So.
Oh, it's even better. Yes.
I'll show the video later.
But they're like,
it's amazing.
I need to take a break from this game.
Yep.
Obviously, I need to step away because my mind has now melted.
The people
with
are
PUBG.
Killing themselves.
Yes. So that's going to be it for our gaming news. If there's something that we missed, we want to hear from you. Email us at hello@theinnergamer.net and we'll talk about it next week. Don't forget, if you like what you hear, please give us a review on iTunes and you can also tell a friend. We'll be back up the break with our discussion topic on evolving video game franchises. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Today on The Inner Gamer, in this discussion topic, we are going to be discussing evolving video game franchises. This discussion first came to light when we heard about Far Cry 5's announcement of DLC, in which they have a game that's a very serious religious cult-based game, and their DLC consists of zombies, spiders on Mars, and then going back to the Viet Cong.
What in the literal hell?
Literal hell.
Where did that come from? Where did all that come from?
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah. Like, okay.
By the
way. You know the episode of South Park where they're talking about how the manatees write Family Guy episodes?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that's kind of what the situation we have going on. We have aliens on Mars with zombies. Perfect.
Actually, yeah. I was thinking the South Park episode with Margaritaville where they cut the chicken's head off and it just runs around this whole thing.
Either or, no, both are valid options of how this DLC was created.
That's so true.
Both are valid.
Oh, so true. Man.
South Park, you did it again.
Anyway, so I'm moving my headphones off of here so they don't like take up space. Sorry.
Good.
So anyway, I have this. I just split this up into two conversations. So there's one part is going to be post-launch evolution, and then the other part is going to be pre-launch evolution. So games that shifted and changed before they launched, and then games that shifted after launch.
Sure.
So let's start with Far Cry.
Okay.
So let's go way, way back in time. Far Cry 1.
Yep.
Like, it was a thing that was made by Crytek, which is some most people don't realize that.
I did not know that.
Crytek owned the island, and it was, you know, attacking the island or whatever. And then after Crytek got off of that, they went off and started Crysis, and then it got picked up by somebody else, and now it's being made by Ubisoft. And yeah, that was with Far Cry 2, Far Cry 3, Far Cry 4. In the between, you had the first departure of this franchise with Far Cry Blood Dragon, which was standalone DLC that was bonkers crazy.
It was bonkers, but it was the right kind of bonkers.
Oh, so good.
It was
so
really good.
It's a game that, no one knew that they wanted.
Like, seriously, like as far as like that 80s retro sci-fi pulp style game, I was like the whole time you're playing, like, I don't know what's happening, but I fucking love every second of this.
It's the only Far Cry I've ever completed.
It's short. It's a short game.
Yeah, it's not very long, but I find it just hilarious.
Yeah, right.
I haven't
just like every game we hear you talk about. It's like I never completed that game.
Yeah. So
our editor in chief for a video game podcast. I haven't played that one.
I've played them all. Like Far Cry 2. I just
to completion, Brett.
Well, it's not important. I want to 100% that
100% all of those games right now.
Yeah, I need my platinum.
I need you to go 100% GTA 5.
No, it's okay. I beat the story.
Okay. That's all that matters.
I beat the game. I finished it. It's okay. All matters. Okay. Anyway, so Far Cry 5, they've announced DLC for this one. And I just the contrast between these two games is incredible because Far Cry 5, as we mentioned before, religious cult set in Montana. There's this guy who basically, if you don't join up with their religion that they have, you're basically going to get killed. X'd off, done. Very, very serious
like,
game.
Like, that's a very serious tonal theme for a game.
Yeah, and like, but then they've mixed in these, you can play co-op, you can drive cars off of things, you can fly airplanes, like all these somewhat more silly types of things amidst this like serious storyline.
Shit that everyone did in the first Halo multiplayer where you just try to put as many grenades under a warthog as you possibly could to
launch. Oh, that was so much fun. I used to love that. It was great.
Great times.
But then, DLC comes out, and they have three things that they're announcing with the season pass. So one of them is Dead Living Zombies, in which it pits players against hordes of undead-like zombie-infested wasteland. Dead Living Zombies.
Oh. Dead Living Zombies. Is the dumbest name I have ever heard for a DLC. Dead Living Zombies.
Oh, it gets worse. Well, not really worse. It's just different.
The Dead Living Undead.
It's all great. Yes, Dead Living Undead. Then they have Hours of Darkness, which is where you go to Vietnam and battle against the Viet Cong. And then they have Lost on Mars, get in a spacesuit, drop them on the red planet, and fight spiders.
Why are spiders on Mars? Like, you didn't want to go, like, with an actual maybe alien theme? Or
didn't Helldivers have spiders?
Yeah, but that made sense.
Helldivers had aliens, bugs.
Yeah, exactly. Same difference, bugs.
No.
It's all bugs.
No.
It's all bugs.
I mean, it's silly.
Arachnids, okay. And,
but, so... Yeah, it's silly and weird, but I think what Far Cry needs to figure out who they are.
They're doing a Call of Duty thing identity. Where it's like, you know, they started the zombie thing, but then the last one was at Advanced
like
Warfare.
Like the whole 80s and
crazy. Like, cool, like, but it was like completely out there, and which made it better, but this is just like, we don't understand what you're doing here. What are you doing? What are they doing?
I get it, sort of.
I don't get it.
But I mean, it's trying to like just make diverse gameplay types with this world that they have established.
Rather than focus on the one like hook for your game, which is already great, a religious zealot in Montana, deep state, you've got some crazy shit happening there. That's great. That's a great hook. I'll play that game. But then like, you know what? We really want to appeal to everybody that we can. So let's also get some, I don't know, spiders from Mars or something. Dave, are you smoking? I'm just throwing out ideas,
man. No, the manatee is.
Maybe they were just really, really drunk, and they were like, let's just make a bunch of this crazy shit and make it happen.
You know what I think would be a good part of the game? Is if you put it in with dead living zombies.
That's a great idea.
That's a great idea. Hand me another Pabst Blue Ribbon.
They took our jobs.
They basically looked at Blood Dragon like, that was a really good idea. Instead of doing a standalone game, let's just make it DLC.
Yeah.
But so the thing that bothers me about this is that, I mean, I haven't played all of Far Cry's. I played them, but I haven't like gone through them extensively because I don't really like those experiences for whatever reason. But these are the kinds of things that I feel like I would have a blast playing. Like, I love the idea of like this dead. I mean, I'm sure Dead Living Zombies is going to be like outrageous and stupid and weird. And then same with like Lost on Mars. That's surely going to be outrageous and crazy.
Right.
Like, I feel like they should pivot and evolve the game towards the Far Cry Primal wasn't serious or wasn't funny or whatever. But that was such a departure from like their other stuff. And I like the idea of them doing something where you have like a central focus in terms of you have one character pitted against all these enemies or whatever, but put it in like vastly different experiences. But then I think adding the humor could be an interesting twist for them with Far Cry, because Blood Dragon is a perfect example. Like, that was so good and everybody remembers it. But I mean, people like Far Cry 2, I guess, for the challenge and whatnot. But I mean, can you really tell a difference between Far Cry 3 and 4? I mean, they were different locales, but can you isolate why there were different games in any specific way? But are they memorable?
I think gameplay had evolved a little bit.
I love Far Cry 3's villain.
Yeah, it was
like versus Far Cry 4.
Versus 4, I mean, mechanics changed.
I mean, they were both still very good. I mean, yeah, the atmospheres and the settings may have been somewhat similar, but I mean, for me, like, what was great about Far Cry, I mean, like, that was a fantastic casting.
Yeah.
Character choice. Like, man, memorable villain. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Psycho.
Yeah.
And you yourself was like, you know, as you play the game, you know, your character's like, well, I guess I'm I saved my friends. Yay. However, I am messed up. I'm a bit distressed now in the head.
Right.
So if you guys could define what Far Cry is, how would you define it?
Ooh.
See what I mean?
It's basically like an Indiana Jones like esque going out and being thrown into these really shitty situations where you have to survive, first person shooter thing.
Yeah, I would describe it as a more cinematic first person shooter. Maybe not to adventure. The scale of something like of
FPS adventure, semi-RPG.
Semi-RPG, yeah. I mean, like, not necessarily to the caliber of something like Uncharted, especially since Uncharted was vastly different in the realm of third-person, first-person, and very linear story. But it is very cinematic in a way. I mean, everything you do in that game has a very cinematic feature to it when you're healing yourself. I don't know how many bullets I dug out of my forearm.
Oh, man, that was great. Right. Far Cry 2?
Yeah.
And 3 and 4. But
yeah.
Far Cry 2.
There was some cool...
Let me heal myself. I'll break my wrist again. Okay, now we're great.
Yeah.
We're in good shape.
Yeah, it's more of like an open world cinematic FPS.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because most of them have been open world, you know.
Right.
For the most part. Yeah.
Choose your own path and kind of figure out how you want to explore the world that they have.
A lot of stuff to find and do.
Yeah.
It's not the main quest.
I don't know. It's so weird to me. Like, I like Far Cry. I think it's interesting. I always love watching the trailers and stuff like that. But once I get into the game, I'm glad that the Far Cry 5 is going to be adding the co-op aspect to it, because I think that's an important part of this, because I feel like the other ones, like, I like them a lot, but playing with a friend, I feel like is going to be something like with Borderlands. Like, I never would have played Borderlands if it wasn't for the co-op component to it.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll talk about that more later.
Because
it got really, really challenging and everything. And I feel like Far Cry should have probably realized that sooner and put that in there, and I probably would have gotten more attracted to it. But again, they still have... I mean, it always catches my attention, and a lot of people love that game, but I feel like there is just always... It's like they're reinventing something every time, but not the right thing.
Well, it's like every time they're trying to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
Every freaking game. And again, it's that standard Ubisoft modus operandi is take a great idea and just fucking make it mediocre.
I mean, it's true.
Yeah, how can we take this amazing idea and just water it down until it's kind of blasé? Anybody? Why don't we do just that? Yeah, it's a great idea.
Yeah, millions.
Millions.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know, but I'm excited to see what these DLCs become.
They could be silly and they could be fun, but I wish ultimately that more attention was paid to the core game and its story, and not make it so cartoonish.
Right.
Don't make it cartoonish. It doesn't need to change into a cartoony.
But this hasn't really been a trend, has it? Where, like, really crazy DLC minus Advanced Warfare 2 or whatever.
No, I mean, like, Far Cry 4. I don't remember what the DLC was for that. Do you guys remember they had for that? Yeah.
No, it was just more related to the actual world and story. It wasn't like this, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, just in general, video games, like, I can't really think of people going, like, way out left field type
Call,
thing.
Call of Duty for sure. But
the first Borderlands did. When the first Borderlands did their zombie DLC.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. Really?
The first Borderlands?
Yeah, the first Borderlands DLC, yeah.
Well, then if you look at Red Dead Redemption 1, when they did the zombies, you know, they had the zombie thing that went out there.
Everybody wants to do zombies.
That was the end of zombies.
But some go a little weird. Not always. I mean, hell, even Wolfenstein's DLCs are a bit more strange. They try to go into a little bit more of that weird paranormal shit sometimes, but it's still freaking good.
Yeah.
Right.
And Wolfenstein's got, I mean, I feel like their setting accommodates that better than like Far Cry.
Yeah.
Like Far Cry just feels, I mean, when they bring this out, it's just like a shock. But Wolfenstein, if they did something like, let's take the world to Viet Cong or whatever,
I feel
like
that would be totally in the realm. Let's have BJ Blazkowicz go shoot spiders on Mars. I would be, that would, I just saying that just amped me up.
But I mean, the world that, that they've created there, right? It already is kind of wacky. It's set in a time and it's set in present day in a different universe. So, like, your mindset's already like, okay, yeah, it's kind of crazy. You know, there's a suspension of disbelief. But then you do something real like this Far Cry 5, and it's supposed
like
to be
a very realistic, real deep state, religious, you know, a very serious
tone.
And then we're throwing zombies in.
Alien spiders.
It waters it down again. It just takes away from what the experience is supposed to be. Fucking Ubisoft, man.
Fucking Ubisoft.
I mean, these could have been great ideas for like new Far Cries.
Yes, you could have separated all these into separate games.
Well, that's the point that I'm like kind of trying to get at is like that these would be games that would be worth. Maybe this is what they're doing. Maybe they're just trying to test the waters, put out a bunch of different experiences, and see what.
They're really good at testing the waters. They never dive in though.
Yeah,
that's my problem with Ubisoft is they test the waters way too much, and instead they just never dive in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just dive in the
Let's
deep
move
end.
On to the pre-launch ones because I'm getting pissed.
Oh, wait. We got one more. I want to talk about Saints Row for a second.
Oh, Saints Row.
Yeah. We'll talk about quickly. Okay. So, yeah. Saints Row is a game that also followed the same pathway where like it started out as this is a gang war kind of experience and very serious, very GTA, open world. And then you get to Saints Row 4, which is the gang leader's a president and aliens invade everything.
It gets weird.
It gets so weird.
When
and I'm
you're
like,
hearing I need a hero playing while you're running around and shooting up stuff, like it's bonkers. It's like if Michael Bay kind of partnered with Tim Burton and just made some crazy shit.
But I wonder if that helped the franchise or if that hurt the franchise.
I think that helped.
Yeah.
I think that they were, you know, if you tried to replicate something like GTA,
yeah,
you're going to fail.
Because they started that way.
Because GTA is GTA.
And then slowly they started becoming more and more outrageous and stuff. And then
that
got out of the hell.
That evolve was great.
Yeah.
Stay away from trying to be GTA. They already have established. If you want to make a gangland kind of thing with some, let's make it crazy. Let's make it bonkers. Let's make it outrageous and have a lot of fun with it. That's great.
Yeah.
Which people did.
Yeah.
People loved that.
Oh, yeah. I wish they had kept that kind of mindset with Agents of Mayhem. Is that I had the look of being silly and weird and goofy and stuff, but they didn't really go all in with that, and it didn't really help them a whole lot.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I love the idea of these games just taking a silly tone. I mean, like, again, Borderlands, which let's move on to Borderlands, actually. Let's talk about that for a second.
Yeah.
So, pre-launch evolution.
Pre-launch.
So we talked about post-launch. Those are
good,
all games.
This is a good one right here.
Yeah. So, Saints Row and Far Cry, all post-launch, where they started as one thing and they've evolved over time.
Right.
Now, let's talk about games where they started as one thing in development.
Yeah.
And by the time they came out, it was like
something completely different.
So, with Borderlands, when they first started it, it was going to be a serious game, realistic graphics. They had put all this
looked
time in this
amazing
crazy
engine. And that original trailer with that chick talking on that like precipice of like that cliff, and she looks to the camera and half of her face is all eaten up, and you're like, oh my god, wow, this is gonna be
dark.
This is gonna be intense.
Yeah.
And then it came out, which, don't get me wrong, not like I was unhappy, but I was like, oh, this is a very different tone I'm feeling right now.
Yeah,
and still good.
It was fascinating. So they experimented this whole cell shading art stuff, and
last
it actually
minute.
Yeah,
last minute,
and it
very
was so such a depart. Like the person that was the I think she was the art director for the game. She actually left the company because she was like, all this work I put into this, and now they're completely scrapping and going a different direction. So she ended up leaving, but the game ended up succeeding
bad
more
choice.
So for it.
Sorry.
But what I also thought was interesting, too, is that when they were building this game, they had this whole RPG system set up, and they had all this inspiration of what they were going to do, but they didn't really have a reason for this, like, shooting and loot collecting from these dead bodies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's where the idea of the Vault Hunter system came around, because they wanted a virtuous reason for killing people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have the vault, you are basically going around to hunt for the Vault Hunters and do this thing. So it's like you don't feel like you're just killing people just to kill people. And you know, rummage their, through their bodies. And then the Pandora idea came from the fact that it's like opening Pandora's box. You never know what you're going to get. And that's where that whole like analogy came from with the world of Pandora. And I thought that was kind of interesting.
When Pandora closed the box, what was the one last thing left inside? Fucking seriously?
I have no idea. Tell me.
Hope.
Oh. Yeah. Hope.
Cool.
I hate hope. Both of you.
Hope is awesome.
Shut up and move yeah. on.
Is there hope here right now?
No, there's none left in the box.
All the hope all is away. Gone.
No, but like, I mean, Borderlands, as you mentioned, when we were first exploring it, it was going to be very serious. And by the time we get to Borderlands 2...
They have fully embraced it.
They have fully embraced that weirdness, but because they can be bizarre, they can still tell that serious story. And what I mean by that is, hell, in the original Borderlands 2, Handsome Jack is a fucking amazing villain.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm talking from a literary standpoint, from a thematically standpoint, from a cinematic standpoint. He is a fantastic villain. You love to hate this guy.
Yeah.
I mean, by the time you get to the end, you're like, I am so glad I get to shoot you in the face. This is fantastic.
This is great.
You kind of want to be him in a way sometimes, but then you also hate him.
Yeah.
So much. He
bought a pony made of diamonds and named it Butt Stallion.
Yeah.
Good writing there, Gearbox.
Who comes up with
that?
Fantastic.
Who comes up with that? So yeah, Borderlands. I'm glad that they took that risk and made that decision, because that was something that was again last minute, and they were like, okay, let's really shift
gears, and it again because they were able to change that to almost cartoon esque, they could tackle other serious things and make the story a much more engaging experience. Looking at Assault on Dragon Keep, where Tiny Tina is basically reflecting on the death of Roland and having to come to terms with it, and it's told through the story of D&D, which for me was just like, man, I cried like a bitch at that. Dude, I really did.
Yeah.
By the end of it, oh man. Still. Do what?
What?
You haven't played it?
I have not played it.
Get the fuck out of
Wait,
here.
Wait, who the hell right are now. You?
I know.
You are a terrible gamer in every part of the
like
way.
Like, you have any fucking room to speak.
I have plenty of room to speak. So the next thing I'm going to speak on is Fortnite.
The game we love to hate.
So this is another one that's
you know what?
A
as
good
much
realm.
As we want to hate on it, it is a successful game. End of story. Period. Fortnite is a successful game. Like now, yes, we were going to be looking at a horde style tower building defense zombie game. Going back to zombies, but.
Seriously.
But now...
More like mutants, I guess.
Mutants, whatever you want to call them. But yes, it came out as that and has since evolved into the cartoon PUBG, which I don't know how many players are playing this game right now.
More than PUBG. I thought it was like 40 million or something like that.
Oh, I'm looking it up.
No, that can't be right. That might be right. I don't know.
There's a lot of people. But... yeah, I mean, I find it what Epic did so well. Why am I getting a phone call? I don't know who that is. Bye. Decline.
If you just tried to call Brett, sorry,
you were declined.
F you.
It was goodbye. But so they built this sandbox game, and you know the reason why I put it in the pre-launch thing is because the game's not actually officially released yet at all. Still in early access, basically, but. Because they built all these systems and they built all this stuff, they had such a good, strong backbone to then, in 2 months, build a PUBG clone, essentially, in the game.
3.4 million active users.
Right now?
Yep.
At this very moment?
Yes.
That's three times as many as PUBG?
Yeah.
Shit.
Wow. 3.4 mil.
Okay, cool. So that's good stuff right there.
So you can't deny its popularity.
I do not deny it.
No.
I just hate it.
It's doing good. But the reaction to this was because they were smart. Whoever decided to put all the systems that they put in this game was genius, because then they can react quickly to the community feedback. And like Epic, I mean, they do Unreal Engine. So obviously they have a lot of experience building great systems and stuff like that. So, I mean, this is so cool how they were able to evolve as rapidly as they did. And who knows what they're going to bring out. I mean, they've already, they just announced like season three of their Battle Royale pack or whatever. It's going to have new types of modes and things that are coming out. And they're just iterating on it. Like, super
fast. I give props for that. That's really good of them.
Keeping it fresh, right. keeping the players coming back for more and the new engaging stuff. That's fantastic.
And the whole, like,
excellent practice for
Overwatch effect.
The castle battles that they have, like, I think that is really cool because they already have that in place, and it's like we need to utilize that somehow.
Watching them come out with the new crafting stuff that they've also introduced as they've, you know, been doing the Battle Royale, I've watched some pretty clever freaking people kill in very clever ways.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's insane. Someone constructing four walls around someone very quickly and then quickly adding traps into that to where spears come out from all different angles to stab the guy and then just dancing on his corpse. I was like, I wouldn't even be mad. I would just be damned impressed.
We should all get this on PlayStation 4 and stream. All right, it's done. Tune in next Sunday for our stream.
I've already played this game. It's not fun.
Well, you're going to like it. You're just going to sit down and enjoy it.
I'm going to be bitching the whole time to say that.
It's like you playing Destiny.
Destiny 2 I had fun with.
I know.
Yeah, it was good.
Yes, Destiny 1 was just...
So, anyway, that's our discussion on evolving video game franchises. There's plenty more out there to talk about, but...
Let us know some games that you've thought about out there that have evolved either pre-launch or post-launch that maybe we missed and we could discuss a little bit next time.
Exactly. That'd be awesome. So
put them down in the comments down below.
I got a question for you guys.
No.
So Overwatch, big, right? And a lot of people try to copy that. And a lot of people haven't actually succeeded at doing arena style, you know, battling.
People have a PUBG, which is crazy.
Yeah, which is like, so what is happening here? Are we seeing the switch over to this and more people are going to try to do this? Because this seems to be a little more successful in the attach rate of new fans. But are we going to, like, have we derailed from Overwatch to this? Is my question. Oh, do you think we're going to continue to see Overwatch clones?
I feel like the reason Battle Royale has been so... there's been so many clones of it is because it's so much easier to execute that than like Overwatch balance is such a like making a hero shooter like that's so much time to make sure that all your characters are diverse enough.
When all you've got to do is throw guns out into the world and people can just use them or whatever, the game kind of balances itself by
single
who finds
map.
What it's just kind of easy. But for Overwatch, like you're saying, it's very methodical.
I think about that,
it's very methodical. It's also much smaller in scale, which I think takes a lot of attention to detail.
True.
Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, I think we'll still see Overwatch like clones, but it's just going to take longer to do.
Like how
five Battle Royales that have come out.
Right, so.
I like how 50 Roadhogs coming over a hill coming down at you.
I like how
Battle Royale Overwatch.
Let's not. God. No.
We cannot go there.
Trademark Blizzard.
Well, I like how now Overwatch is the like staple of hero shooter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They made it. Well, I mean, I guess MOBAs
did. They
made
it big.
MOBAs made the game of hero games, but then
but not everybody had
Overwatch
a PC to be able to play League of Legends.
It's Overwatch clones. It's not just a
hero
shooter. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay. Right. Cool. Well, that's going to conclude our discussion topic this week. If there is a topic that you want to hear us talk about, please let us know at hello@thinnergamer.net. And also you can contribute on Patreon at least $12 a month. And we will, $12 a year. Sorry. What am I saying? $12 a month. If you want to do $12 a month, that'd be fine.
You're welcome to.
You will get all the prizes.
You would. All the prizes. Don't forget to check out our video of this segment every Thursday at youtube.com/TheInnerGamer.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Looking forward to next week. Let's talk about our upcoming video game releases. February is winding down.
Yep.
And as a result, we only have two games coming out, but both of them sound very interesting. On February 23rd for PS4, Xbox One, and PC, we have Past Cure. It's a dark psychological thriller that blurs the line between dreams and reality. An intense, cinematic, story-driven experience that challenges the player to use mind-bending mental abilities to survive. And then also on the 27th of February, which is one day before the last day of February, PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, we have De Blob 2. This is a game in which Comrade Black and the Inkies are back with a whole new plot to rid the world of color. Set off on an action-packed color adventure where custom paints, patterns, and music bring the world to life. De Blob 2 is a creative evolution driven by your imagination. There you have it, folks.
Neat. Okay.
Two games, mini games of awesomeness.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, so that's going to wrap up our show this week. Be sure and check us out next Tuesday for more from your favorite video game podcast. Visit theinnergamer.net for our latest episodes, blogs, videos, and social channels. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review on iTunes or tell a friend. And tomorrow, Wednesday, if you are listening to this podcast on Tuesday, come out to Fort Worth for our live awesome meetup event at Bar 2909. It is in Fort Worth, Texas. We will have video games. We will have board games. Yeah. If you have board games, please bring them because that'd be awesome too. And
by tomorrow, we mean Wednesday.
Yeah, it's Wednesday.
Yeah. Oh, you did? I didn't hear you say that. That's not bad.
Yeah.
Clarification.
Wednesday?
Wednesday.
Yeah.
Wednesday. You better have.
I think it's a Wednesday.
Swear to God, if you
didn't,
we'll play it back.
Watch us listen to it.
Beat the shit out of you.
And he'll be like, oh, he didn't really say Wednesday. I'll be like, damn it.
Oh,
but yes, Wednesday.
Oh, they're going to beat me with a sock full of soap.
Wednesday, February 21st.
Did you guys catch that? It's Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Got it.
February 21st.
All right. Check it out. Also, while you're checking that out, go over to our Patreon.
Did we say it's Wednesday, February 21st?
You killed it, Brett.
Oh. We have a Patreon, which is a way for you to donate to our cause. We have prizes for it. Like, you could pay me to beat the shit out of Brett for interrupting me every podcast.
For $1 a month.
Even for $1 a month, I will do this for you, the listener.
We don't promote violence in this podcast.
But do we?
Kind of do. But we do have some awesome rewards awaiting for you. If you do support us, you can go over there. We can do things like early access to videos, early access to streams, our Discord channel, play some video games with us. We have a blast. Head on over to theinnergamer.net and click donate to contribute. And with that, my name is Devin DeRee.
I'm Brady Noski.
I'm Austin Morales. And you've been listening to
The Inner Gamer!
What? What? I don't know what you're talking about. How dare you? I don't know. I don't appreciate that that insinuation. That is how I drink bourbon.
Fucking Cookie Monster over here.
Bourbon.
Throwing it in your face.